So, hi, I'm Phil. I'm a junior chemistry concentrator. I've been spending a lot of time on visualization and sort of genomics stuff recently, so it involves a lot of computer science, which is why I'm here. And so today I'll be talking about ActionScript, and specifically Flare, which is a very powerful library for quickly creating really interesting visualizations on all sorts of data, time data, network data, like correlation data, etc. And it actually creates in a way that you can publish it online, so you don't have to have crazy viewers or things like that. You can just use Flash, which pretty much at this point everyone has. So if you look at the screen here, this is my final project from last year, actually. And I've had to change the... Unfortunately, this looked really cool before, because all these colors were neat and like pretty, but I had to change them all to black so that the projector would catch them. What this basically is the whole network of biochemical reactions in the cell. So I've taken the database of metabolics, basically, of all of how compounds are transformed in the cell, found out how they're linked together through reactions, and then display them all together. So you can actually search and so forth. And it displays the chemical structures as well. But the core fundamentals of what we're going to kind of cover today is, how do I take things like, okay, well, cholesterol can, through this reaction, be made into this, or, you know, this person is Facebook friends with someone else. How do I actually get from having that knowledge to being able to display it in this cool interactive way?
So it's jiggling and interactive. What does that interactivity mean substantively?
So the substantively, this interactivity is for people to like it. I mean, you know, the actual, you know, point of this, so what the actual, you know, these are colored differently in the actual application, but so we can actually see how things link up and actually discover things like, you know, cycles within biochemical reactions and things like that. So you can create these diagrams to sort of study how things transform and what reactions they transform with. And sort of, I thought of this just as like a study guide for anyone sort of studying for the MCAT or whatever, or, you know, researchers interested in particular transformations. I actually made it able to access PubMed for related articles based on a particular reaction, stuff like that. But I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. So the fundamental of ActionScript and Flare is kind of what enables this. You may think my particular application is bogus or not, but I think it's pretty cool how you can actually take this data that's sort of sitting in a database in this, like the way this is in the database is just like, there's particular entries, they're like, you know, this is in like reaction 0, 1, 9, whatever. This is compound, you know, 599. How do we actually show it to people who aren't going to spend like hours kind of connecting them together and seeing how these things actually come together as a whole? There are many different applications for this. If you look at the Flare demos website, flare.prefuse.org/demo, or no, not demo, sample. So if you didn't like my application, another thing people have done in Flare is created this employment visualization. So you can see, you know, I'm a farmer, you know, what proportion of people were farmers in the United States over its time series data, right? So you have information about time, and you have information about, you know, proportion of male to female and things like that. Also, you know, specifying, I'm not actually sure how this particular example works. I'll go back here. So you can see, you know, what male occupations were, you know, what female occupations were. And so what what Flare does in the background is it kind of, you know, you load in data sets, and it has all these tools for, like, filtering, for, you know, it's not going through and, like, I'm not going through each separate thing and seeing, like, you know, is this male or is this female? I'm going to display it if it's female or not. What you do in processing is, in Flare, I'm going to make that mistake like 20 times, is you actually just set a filter and it actually just gives you out the data that is actually relevant to what you're searching for. If we do a search here, it just basically filters out the data that doesn't fit into your particular path and so forth. But so we've seen enough examples. Clearly it's cool. So let's actually go and kind of understand how ActionScript and then Flare, which runs on top of it, works. Okay, so ActionScript is derived from ECMA script, which is also where JavaScript comes from. So they share a lot of similarity in terms of syntax and how functions are done and so forth. And it's an object-oriented scripting language. So people were asking in the processing seminar, is every rectangle a drawn object? Well, no, you're just spitting pixels out. But in ActionScript, there's an advantage where you create a rectangle, and it's not only a bunch of pixels, it's an actual object in memory. It's like, you can think of it as a struct, right? It has certain properties. You can access those properties and change them. For example, changing color or transparency or things like that. So that's what ActionScript enables. And ActionScript is behind what Flash applications are online. So YouTube, countless blogs, whatever, all use ActionScript as their sort of display language. Flex is this new thing, a relatively new thing that Adobe's done. It's a markup language, just like HTML, that allows you to quickly create things like forms and text inputs and things like that. So in my application I showed you, when I was doing those searches and that result list popped down and all that, I didn't have to go in and code that. I can actually use what's in Flex, and all you do is like you literally take a tag, it's like text box or something, with like ID and something like that, exactly the way you do HTML, and it creates a text box for you at a particular location. But what actually creates the interactivity is ActionScript that runs within Flex. So Flex you can get for free online if you're a student, which I assume all of you are. And Flare is a library for ActionScript, which you can run in Flex, right? That allows for this simplified animation and data visualization stuff. So Flex 3 Builder, I really recommend you guys get this. It's like an integrated development environment. So I'll be showing this a few times today, but basically it's this. It looks really complicated, but it's incredibly useful. You have code here, which all of your actual work goes here. You have your file structure here, so when you're importing files and so forth, you can just drag them into here. All of your functions and all of your sort of resources are listed here, right? So these are all of the Flex resources. These are all the tags I've created in Flex, right? You can do ActionScript-only applications here, which is what I'll focus on. And then you have the debugging window here. So if you download this, which I really recommend you do, it's free if you're a student or if you're an unemployed developer. I don't know how you prove you're an unemployed developer, but it's really useful. For example, you run your program, and then you can just play, right, and it runs it. Or you can run it in debug mode, which is really cool. It's kind of like doing GDB in C, right? But you don't have to specify anything. It'll just run the ActionScript program, and when it comes to an error, it'll actually pop up this debugging menu, which will show you exactly the line that the program failed on. It'll just like show you like where the problem exists, and you can actually go into the like data structure and actually see what the values of each variable are. You don't have to like set any watch points or anything like that. So it's really useful. And I recommend you get it. So the one thing you have to do is you have to upload your student ID. But they usually get back to you within like 24 hours. So it's pretty quick. So in order to understand this advanced visualization stuff, I mean, you need a good understanding of sort of what Flash is and what ActionScript programs are. So I mentioned it's very object-oriented. Everything in Flash is an object, whether it's a line or a text file or a text box or even like a color or like a font property. They're all objects. They all exist in sort of abstraction, right? And these are all organized in a tree hierarchy. So you have objects that have parents and children, right? So you add objects to other objects, and you sort of build this large tree that actually ends up being your application. So this will make more sense as we sort of like go through it. So everything that a user sees is a child of the stage object. So the stage is sort of like the fundamental kind of, you know, program, right? Attached to that is the root, right? Which is a sprite. A sprite in Flash and ActionScript is an actual thing that's drawn. It's one of the sort of ways you can draw things out to the screen. And then everything else that's displayed, like each other line, each other circle, each other, you know, piece of data is actually child somehow of that root. And it can go pretty deep, right? It can go pretty, you can have children of, you know, particular sprites and so forth. So the usefulness of this is like, if I want to add, for example, a little thing which has like, you know, three circles and like a line connecting them, right? I can alter the properties of all of those things. Like I can alter how transparent it is, or, you know, what its rotation is or something like that. All together, right? If I make them all the children of the same thing, right? If I make them all, if this is something that draws a circle and this is something that draws a rectangle, and if I make them the child of one particular node, I can change these together as a group by just changing this and so forth. Or I can get rid of them by just removing this and so forth. And all of that memory stuff is done for you by ActionScript. So it's really useful. So we'll get into some examples of how Flare actually does this and how you add things in Flare and so forth. So one thing to understand in ActionScript is it's very focused on classes, subclasses, and inheritance. So it's kind of, in a sense, Java's like this as well, but you don't see as much of it in processing. So a class is just like a sort of, it's a wrapper that contains some certain functionality. So a class is like an object, right? We had the, you know, a rectangle is a class of just like a more primitive thing that's just like something that's drawn up. It has some functions for drawing, right? But if we want to create a rectangle, we create a subclass of that, right? Which changes the way in which that object is drawn. So we override some of the functions of the master class, and we create a subclass of that. And if we wanted to create a particular object that was like a rectangle that, like, if you rolled over it, it changed its color and it actually could be clicked, right? Like a button, that would be a subclass of like a rectangle, you can imagine. Like somebody came in, wrote, you know, overrode those more primitive functions, right, and replace them with a more advanced functionality of a particular button. So as you see in our visualization, what those actual circles are that are represented, right, are node sprites. But those are inherited from data sprites, which is just more abstractly, like there's some information, there's some sort of, you know, it's an individual object, right, which is inherited from dirty sprite, which basically handles like just drawing the thing, right? Which is inherited from sprite, which is just any sort of visual object that's customizable. So this is like a primitive like Flash component, right? And what Flare does is it lets you play at the level of like, you know, I want to create a node. I don't care like what the individual drawing, you know, functions are or whatever. I can go back and change them if I want. But I don't have to worry about that. So in a sort of broad sense, and you can talk about this for days, but so, you know, these objects are subclasses of, you know, the larger sprite class, which is sort of any kind of drawn out object. You can actually access the functions of the higher class, right? Like if you don't create a new draw function, you can just use the old one and so forth, right? And you can actually change some of the functions of the parent, right, and create your own if you're making a new object. So you can reuse code really well. That's what's cool about this ActionScript language. So, So display object is any visual thing that's, it's actually even more primitive than sprite. So I kind of lied to you on the first page. So display object is any visual object that's added to the stage. And this is, any of these can be the root node, right? So you have the stage, and you have the root, and then you have everything else attached to that, right? And some of the more primitive ones are, you know, bitmap. If you load in some image, you can actually just display that image out. text field, video, so YouTube. Basically all they have is basically video, right? Shapes and things like that. But Sprite is actually the most useful, in my opinion, of these. It's very kind of like plastic object that you can create very complicated things with. So Sprite actually in Flare is what creates the nodes, the edges, and all of these different things are actually advanced versions of Sprite. So they've overridden a lot of the primitive components of Sprite and changed them to their advantage. So the next few slides are sort of going over the basics of how you create an ActionScript application. So if you actually go into Flex Builder, as I showed you before, and just go to, you know, new, create new ActionScript project, and what you'll get is this. And this is the most, this is sort of like the starting point, right? So you have a package, right, which is sort of the wrapper for your whole application. You import Sprite, right? Because that's sort of what your root is, right? And then this is your actual root node. This is actually what you're adding to the stage, is your particular program. So your particular program is a class that extends Sprite, right? It uses sprites, and you can add new sprites to it and so forth, but it it takes Sprite as its like kind of primitive, right? And you create whatever you want inside of that. And then this is its constructor function. So this is actually what is, this is like main for people familiar with C or other things. So this is when your program starts, right? It imports these functionalities. So it's always going to import Sprite because that's what it's built on. And then this is your actual you know, overall program. And this is what's called to actually start it, right? So this is what's going to execute first. And from here, you can, you know, here you can do things like loading data and so forth. Or just setting up your application in general. So one of the things you need to set up in order to have a visual application is you actually need to specify width and height and background color and a frame rate. And you would do that right before your class. So right before your actual visual code, right, you need to specify that right here. So you can change this based on based on your needs. And you know, colors are just done in hex here. So you either do pound sign FFF or you can do 0x and then these codes. So if we want to actually add things to the sprite that is our root node, right? If we just executed this, right, obviously nothing would show up. But if we actually want to draw something out, like if we want to draw out a line in a circle, right? We would create a new sprite, and then to the sprite's graphics, right? You know, set a fill style, right? So set a particular background color. Set the way we draw lines, so how wide the actual, you know, borders are, right? And then we'd actually draw out a circle. So this is one of these primitive functions in graphics that every sprite has that allows you to draw a circle. And then to actually have it display, to actually be able to see this, we need to add it to that tree hierarchy, right? I mentioned everything the user sees is at some point, at some level, a child of the stage, right? And since this is our class, this is our actual program, right? If we want to add this new sprite we've created to the display tree, we add it to this, which refers to the class you're in, right? So this is just our new program, right? We're going to add child, and it's going to be sprite, this new sprite we've created. And once you add the sprite, right, it doesn't matter that it's attached to something or it's not attached to something. Just like in dictionary, right, you create a node. It doesn't matter if you like are pointing to it or not. You can change the value inside of it. So we can change actually where it's located on the display. And just as a word of note, to debug, you can use trace. And trace will output whatever you put inside of it to that debug window in the Flex developer, the Flex builder. So what all this will do is just add a circle of radius 10 at 50-50 in the screen. And again, I didn't mention this, but the coordinate system in ActionScript begins from the, it goes, you know, X goes like this, and Y increases as you go down. Same thing as in processing. So we created this this you know main sprite which to which everything else is attached, right? This is our main you know program, and we have the sort of initial function that's called the constructor function, and we can create more functions. And the way you do this is you always declare them by saying function, and you also say private or public, which is sort of like function scope. In C, there is variable scope, right? If you declare a variable outside of everything, then all your functions can access it. In the same way, ActionScript has that with functions, right? So if you have a particular sprite and it has something you want to be accessible from anywhere, if you want like its parent to call, like you know, to have it start rotating or something, you'd make it a public function. But if it's something that's internal to your object, like if it's doing some sorting or if it's doing some sort of calculation that's not really required for interaction with other sprites, you could just make it private. And that's the sort of style you do it. And every time you use a variable in ActionScript, you specify, when you specify a variable, you also have to specify the type after a colon. And return values are colon after the function declaration. But otherwise, things are quite similar to what you're sort of used to. So the same thing with variables. If you just declare it normally, I think it's local, but you can specify them to be public or private, meaning the same thing as with functions. So as I mentioned before, you can have multiple sprites that are the children of the same sprite, and their properties can all be modified together. So I'm going to show some... oops, I didn't actually open it previously. So we'll actually go into our development environment, and we have our... So as you see, I've specified a width and a height and so forth. I've created a container called a sprite called container, right? And it doesn't have, there's no visual information in this sprite at all. There's no color, there's no graphics, right? It's just an object. And I add it to the main root, right? But then what I can do is I'll loop through a particular loop. And as I said, you know, you always have to specify the variable type when you so to declare a variable, you say var, and then you have to specify the variable type after you name the variable. And then for each of these numbers, I create another number just based on some math, and I add a new circle to that container. And the create circle function is just, I've abstracted away that actual drawing to another function. So it does the same thing. It just, you know, chooses a color, chooses a stroke style, draws a circle, sets it to the coordinates I've passed it, right? But I only do that once, right? But it goes through this loop, creates these all these circles, and then all I've ever added to the display is a container, and then I've added all these children to the container. So if I run this, it'll just create, this is very primitive, but it'll just create 10 circles, right? And if you imagine how this actually looks in the memory, or in the sort of, you know, object representation, you have, you know, the root node, then you have container, which you can't actually see, right? But then all of these are the children of the container. So if I wanted this to disappear, I could set its alpha, its transparency to 0 or something like that. So the reason I'm saying all this stuff is it's kind of important to understand the parent-child relationship. And even though you've added a child to something, right, you can still access it. Like I said before, you can still change the coordinates once you've added an object, right? This function numChildren returns an integer of how many children a particular sprite has. So you can call that on particular sprites to see, for example, if you want to iterate through all the children of something, right? And sprite getChildAt, and then the index, returns a particular sprite, a particular child of a sprite. So you can sort of iterate through the display tree that way. So one thing that sprites are very powerful, as I said earlier, because unlike the things like rectangles or other things, you can actually, there's so many functions that sprites have. And one of the important functions that sprites have are event listeners. So basically they check if ever something happens that's related to that sprite. So this event listener, basically it sets up, it's kind of like an AJAX, right? You send an XML HTTP request and you specify a handler function, right? This is sort of like setting up another kind of request and then a handler function. So it requests that whenever there is a mouse event called clicked on the sprite, call the function handler. And that's just a name of a function that I've created. And handler, it's automatically passed this thing called an event, right? Which, given what this event was, it's the mouse event, right? And I can do things with this actual event. So I can say, like, the event is kind of like an abstract object. It has an associated sprite. So you can say event.sprite.like, change the sprite's, visibility or its color or something like that using this event, right? It has a lot of properties itself. But here I just output to the window click. You can see how you can set things up to sort of wait for events to happen and then act upon them. And you can actually figure out what was acted upon based on this event that's being passed along. So if you actually read the reference for event, there are many different things you can actually pass along that way. For example, the coordinates of where the click happened, or the actual which individual sprite was the one that was clicked, and so forth. And in terms of mouse events, there are obviously like around like 15 different ones. There's separate ones for when a mouse enters something and then for when it leaves, or if you drag something, if you let go, those kinds of things are all available. If you want to create buttons, there's this really, you can go through the kind of hassle of creating all of this, waiting for when something is clicked and then specifying yes, the button has been clicked. But there's this object in Flash called SimpleButton, which just makes a simple button that you can use, and it's very useful. And another thing that I kind of had trouble figuring out at first was how to actually embed new content into your Flash app. So for example, if you want to use some sort of font that isn't necessarily widely distributed, like Arial or something like that, or if you want to make sure that your user actually sees your content with the particular font you're using, you can't assume that everyone has your font, so you actually have to include it into your file. And you use that by creating this little embed tag within your class, within that major root sprite. And what's kind of silly, which I didn't realize at first, is you have to just declare a variable after you embed it. And all that does is basically tells the compiler, like, oh, you need to actually link this in. You don't ever actually use these variables. But for some reason, maybe David can explain, you actually have to declare these variables afterwards so that the compiler actually does link these in and distributes it with your Flash app. Now, word of warning, an application like I showed you, that biochemical one, it's only a few hundred kilobytes, maybe like 200 or 300 kilobytes, but if you add a font in, that's another double that. So you have to kind of consider, okay, well, how much time do I want the user to be waiting around for loading versus, do I really want my own, do I really want my own font? So when you actually want to use it, you can load the font by, as I said, everything in Flash is an object. So if you want to create a text format or a text font that you actually apply to a particular text box, you have to create this new text format. So as I said, create a new variable, call it, Helvetica small. It's a text format, and it's a new text format object that uses this Helvetica font family that we've included, and it's size 11. And then we've created this text field, right? This other text object that we're going to add to the display tree. we've set its text format to this new format we created. We change its text, and then eventually I have to do, you know, this, you know, add child info box for this to actually show up. So a common mistake is to never actually add the sprite to the display tree. So creating custom classes, if you want to like abstract your code away, this might be kind of useful. But I'm just going to skip it for now. I mean, basically all you have to do is you know, create a new folder or create something else, and that's your new package name is basically what folder it's in. And then what your name of your actual ActionScript file is has to be the same thing as your class and your actual constructor function. So then whatever functions are, inside of this you want to use somewhere else, you'd have to do like import, then the package name, which would be utilities, right? And then whatever function that's public inside of here you want to use. I didn't do this when I did my final project, and I really should have, because it helps you move your code into different kind of logical compartments. So Flare, which is sort of the core of this project, the seminar, which kind of got you a little bit late, so contains all these new classes that do really cool things with visualization and data. So the three things that are really cool, in my opinion, are animate. It like really simplifies transitions, like moving stuff around smoothly and so forth. Data, it provides a wrapper for many different data types that you can use in an abstract way. And Viz, which actually creates the visualization object, which is so crucial to Flare. So a cool thing that Flare does really well is transitions. And you can actually create these very complicated movements and animations with particular sprites in Flare. So this is just an example of code where there are these three things that create movement. One of them is tweens. So tweens are basically taking a property of a sprite and changing it to another property, or changing it to a different value, right? But doing it over the period of like some time, like doing it with a smoothing, right? So if we create a tween, and this is what sprite I want to use, right? So I want to use container. In that previous example, we had 10 different circles that were all children of container. I want to take one second to do this, and then I want it to change its y value by 100 over the course of 1 second. So if at this point I just did t1.play, it would basically just move that y, 100 down over the course of 1 second. So that's sort of how you start to get animation, is with these sort of movements. So what this does is actually it takes care of creating all the intermediate frames, and all you'll get is the display of the actual movement. So here I create some other tweens for other properties like scale and so forth. And you can actually link these up in cool ways, like sequence, right? Sequence does tweens, like one will finish and then another one happens, right? So if you want to move something to the right and then down, you use a sequence. And parallels actually allow you to do two different tweens at the same time. So what this would do is it would do tween one and tween two at the same time, and then once those are finished, do tween three and tween four. And then to actually have this work, right, we do play, which actually makes the animation occur. So that's kind of like the way that Flare improves the sort of traditional, parent-child sprite relationship in ActionScript. But what the cool thing is the visualization object. So basically to create one of these visualization objects, you just create var, viz equals new visualization. And that creates this object, and you add it to the stage, or you add it to some sort of child node, and that creates a sort of box within which you can do all of these charts and graphs and things like that. You have to set the bounds so it knows how large it is. If you don't, this kind of screws up. And just like in processing, you can set whether or not it's continuously being updated. So visualization, in a way, it's kind of like a simulation. Some of them are, you know, force directed or have things that change constantly. Like if your numbers are changing constantly, you'd want continuous updates to be true. Otherwise, you can just use this function update. So viz.update, if viz is the name of your visualization object. And that way you can sort of decide when, okay, check all the data, see if I need to draw something new, draw it out then. So if you're doing things like physical models, like the force-directed graph I showed earlier, you need to use continuous updates. What was that? Oh yeah, and the cool thing about updates is you can actually use these tweens and stuff to actually change them. So that's how in that bar chart, that's how they got it to quickly kind of drop down to the next level and so forth, is because they did this update with a transition. So you can sort of mix and match those functionalities together. So the data object. So if you create a visualization object, the parameter that you pass to the visualization, so you do new visualization, and the parameter inside of it is a data object. Or you can manually set, you know, viz.data to something. And what the data object is an array of objects, an array of other data. So we can hard code this data in. For example, this data is an array of kind of objects of other arrays, right? And these will be like sales reports for a particular quarter. So if we did this would be hard coded into our application, and we couldn't change it, which might be useful for some applications. But what's really cool about Flare is it allows you to dynamically load data in quite a simple way. I should probably data source is this really cool Flare thing that allows you to take, for example, tab delimited data, and it will automatically spit out this array of objects without having to do any sort of text processing or any kind of, you know, file size stuff at all. You just basically pass it in. It loads it from a URL, so you don't even need to include it in. Right? So if we create a data source with this location, specify that it's tab data that we want to get, tab separated data. And if we actually tell this data source to load, and we add an event listener for event complete, this is an event, this is like in the loading events, how we know that it's complete, just like it was like mouse event click, this is the same thing. And this is the function that actually gets called. So unlike, I don't separate it out into another function, I can just write the function right here. It's a good way to like cut down on how much space your code takes up. And so loader will return with some data, and I can actually create a data set from that, and then use that to do visualization. So let me just go back to, so we have our visualization object, we have our data object, and then from the data objects, data objects, depending on what kind of data you have, they can contain many different visual representations. And the two I'm going to focus on are node sprites and edge sprites. Node sprites are the sort of individual nodes in a graph or a chart. So even if you have a chart, for example, in that employment chart, you can basically think of it as nodes, which represent particular values, right? They have a time value, they have a particular, you know, height value, they have a particular, you know, class value or something. And then edges that are sort of connecting them, right? In that actual chart display. So node sprites represent the individual, you know, objects or points in this visualization, and edge sprites are what connects to these node sprites. Cool thing about all these data sprite things, right? So this is these are both subclasses of data sprite, which is a larger class, is that they have a data, it shouldn't be a child, it is a property. So if I have this particular node sprite in my data, and I want in my, you know, program, and I want to just like make a comment on it, or, you know, associate it with like a link or associate it with some value, like, you know, is this, you know, where, what's the source of this data, or what is the, you know, text associated with this data, or so forth. You don't have to create like a separate array that like stores all of that. You like, you look it up that way. You can just reference, you know, your node sprite's name dot data dot, you know, is this node my favorite? Or you can just invent your own kind of data labels, right? And set that to whatever you want, basically. So it's a cool way of, you know, not having to use other arrays or other things to store information about your nodes and about your edges. You can just store them inside of the nodes themselves. So with this, with these nodes and these edges, you can create these network data objects, right? So based on, you know, your nodes and how you connect them, you can either create trees, right, which are just like the sort of flash display hierarchy, right? You have parents and children, or you can just create graphs, which are just nodes linked up together by, you know, any, in any sort of way. So how would you actually do something like this? So you, you know, this function basically, this is part of a function that is passed an array of array called nodes that just contains some like strings, for example, like a name or something like that, right? Like a string of names, for example. If we wanted to create a Facebook visualization of like who's friends with like such a person, right? I'd pass in an array of names. So I create a new data, which is a sort of large wrapper, right? And I create a new node sprite, which is one of these individual points, right? And then I add this, so I add this node to data, right? And the reason I don't do add child, right, is that sort of ambiguous. Like, what is this new data you're feeding into me? Like, I don't know if it's a node or an edge or just like, you know, abstract data. So by doing add node, if you look at the reference for data, this is one of the functions that it has. We'll actually add node to the actual data within data, right? And then so I'll loop through the whole length of the names I have, right? And add new nodes for each of those people. Set those nodes' data to like name, right? I told you can set the data to whatever you want, and you can actually create data dot something else and set that to something else even. But then the most important thing is I actually create an edge for the first node, which I added at the very beginning, so it's this one, right? And then the new node, which is the current one that I just added recently. So this is kind of like in, if you're creating a hash table and you're creating nodes in your hash table, like in a linked list, right? If you create a new node, like I'm not actually creating a, sorry, so I'm creating a new node here, but I'm just adding it like many different times to the data set. But because I'm not adding it as a child, I'm adding it as a node, right? I can change its data and add it to the data set, and it sort of gets copied into this data set. So I don't have to worry about creating a new one each time. They're not actual objects, like, in the traditional sense of it. And I'm adding these edges in this data for between these different nodes. So that will create something like this, right? If I load in a bunch of information about nodes, and then I figure out which ones need to be connected to each other, I can actually create these network data structures in this way. Sorry. So I mentioned this is how you actually load in some data. This is another way you can load in XML data. So with data source, it supports tab delimited files, so things that have tabs between fields. JSON, so the JavaScript object notation, something we've done in CS50. And something called GraphML, which is just really precise way of specifying graphs. You can do like directed edges and things like that. But things you might want to use XML for some purposes, like if you want to save where exactly in your visualization a particular node is being displayed, that won't be saved in the traditional node. So like you have to create your own kind of XML and load it that way. So I won't go over this. This PowerPoint will be posted, but these are some ways in which you can use these same URL loader things that basically once you set up this loader, you also add an event listener for event complete, right? Just the same way in DataSource, you wait for the event to be complete, and you actually handle what's returned. And when we actually get this data back, it comes with data, and we can create an XML file, an XML tree from that by using this XML function. So it's a way to load XML data. So you can imagine having XML data that contains like all of your nodes and like what their names are, what their properties are, like what color they are, whatever. You'd set all those properties in ActionScript once you load them. And then also some XML entries for the edges. Like I want to connect the first one and like the 57th one, or I want to connect this and this, you know. So you can create these network structures this way. So we have our visualization, that main kind of visualization object, right? And if we add child that data, whatever it was, whether it's in our case like node and edge information, right? If we do viz.addChildData, the data will not be a child of this, but we can still access it. But what adding the child to viz means is that the visualization object knows where to look now to display things. Because previously it was kind of just hanging out there with no data source. So once you actually do this, we can add these things called operators to visualization. So these are just basically done, if this is your viz object, you basically call operators, which is an array of all the operators that are operating on it, right? And then you can add a particular operator to it. Now what operators are these functions provided by Flare that actually do all of the math behind layouts and behind particular charts and things like that. So once you've already created this node and edge data or time series data, right? If you have a particular time along the bottom and a y coordinate as well, this will actually create the encodings for where to actually draw this out in the bounds of the visualization, which is important why we set the bounds. Because it allows these algorithms to calculate out where these nodes are to occur. So for example, this is a force-directed layout. It uses a sort of spring and like attraction and a repulsion model to lay things out. This requires continuous updates. It gets slow for really big data sets because there's a lot of things that need to be calculated on each iteration. But it is one of the cool ways to lay out data. There are actually very many other ways. Tree map, for example, is like rectangles inside of rectangles, so it's a good representation of size and proportionality between different data points. Circle layout basically puts things radially out like that. I mean, radial tree layout puts them out like that based on how deep they are. It's like how far away it is from the center and so forth. Axis layout basically takes data and just lays it out along two axes based on certain values within it. So when you add these operators, this kind of thing is enabled. Another operator that's very frequently used is the labeler. This will actually allow you to print a little bit of text with each particular point in your data. And so if you look in the reference, this is sort of what the reference looks like, the Flare API. And you'll see, we want to label. What do we want to label it with? Well, we're labeling nodes, so we're going to want to label their, I created, when I loaded my nodes, I set their data.displayName to like something, right, from my XML or whatever I'm loading it from. I set this previously. And if that's what I want to display, I'll put that in a source group. I don't even know what that means. format, I'll set a particular text format. A filter, I can actually filter out which nodes I want to be labeled, which I don't. And policy is also something that is usually left null. So you can add these operators, and it allows you to add something that would be very difficult to do originally very easily. So this would create basically display whatever these nodes data.displayName would be along with each node in a font I specify. So unfortunately, I didn't have a slide, I forgot, but there's an important thing. For example, if you have an axis layout, right, you need to specify how things are, what property of your data they're actually laid out on the axes, right? If I just pass in some random kind of information, I don't know, am I going to lay out things along the x-axis based on like age or based on like the address, or like how do I actually encode that? So there are these, if you look up in the reference, there are these things called property encoders that are also properties of viz, which will actually specify, okay, for the x-axis, or it actually is called the axis operator, I think, or axis encoder operator. And it actually specifies which axis corresponds to which point in your data. So if you loaded tab-separated values data, you have a field called like age or something like that. And if that's what you want your x axis to be, you have to specify that in the property encoder. Another thing that you can add to your visualization is viz.controllers, and then you add specific ones. And these will allow sort of a level of interaction. Whereas, labeler is something that's static, that's always there, it's always associated with a node. You can add these controllers that will create particular functionality for each node. So for example, hover control is one example that tests whether you're over a particular data point, and if you are, it will do something. So so this hover control basically, and if you read the reference, this is all explained, but it creates a hover control. It works for node sprites, or you can specify what exactly am I going to look if I'm hovering for. This just specifies how the drawing order changes, which isn't that important. But the first function is what happens, it's a selection event of what happens when you hover over something. And this is the second one, which is what happens when you stop hovering over something. So a lot of these controllers have things like, click. There's a click controller as well. There's a drag controller as well. There's all these controllers that sort of allow you to move things around and perform certain actions when that happens and when that stops happening. So that allows you to do, interactivity. For example, dragging and dropping something into a separate location, you'd kind of listen for this the selection event. This whole controller allows you to listen for that. And then you can change properties based on that. So what this one would do is, so the event, it's associated with a particular node, right? Events are associated with where they kind of stem from. So the event node, and I can set its line width or whatever property I want to something else. So what this would do is, if I hover over a particular data point, it would change the size of the lines that are it's being drawn. And then once I go off, it'll actually shrink them back again. So another, this is like the last kind of like viz thing. So I mentioned once you add viz, once you add the data to viz, you can access it as viz.data, right? And then within that data, there are nodes, there are edges, right? And other sorts of things. So if you want to actually visit each single data point and do something to it, right? So if I want to visit all of my nodes or all of my edges and change their properties, right? If I want to visit all of my time series data and update their values in some way, there's this function called visit, which is really cool. So you set it to go through, for example, all of the nodes in the data. And when it gets to one, it'll perform this function, right? All the parameters to visit is a function. And what you pass to it is the actual node that you're on in this case, or whatever other data type you are visiting in this data, right? You actually know what you're at. So this is kind of like doing like a for each loop, right? for each of these nodes in this data set, visit them, and we can actually know what that thing we're visiting is. And then, so we've created, you know, node is actually what we're getting passed, and we can actually change properties there. So if we want to go through all of the nodes in our graph and make them transparent or halfway transparent, we can do this visiting, set them to half of their transparency, and so forth. So this is a way you can sort of maybe in real time add and subtract or add data to your data set or remove data. For example, if you want to remove a particular data point from a chart or something, you could visit all of your data points in this, with this function, check if it's the particular one, right? And if it is a particular one, you know, remove the child or, you know, delete it. So my final minute or two will be spent on, you know, just flex. So if you have this development environment, and if I just create an ActionScript project like in the tutorial, file new ActionScript project, right? It'll just create sort of what I've done, what I've sort of stepped through in a way here. But if you create a Flex project, that allows you to take advantage of those components, of those things that necessarily we don't want to spend the time decoding. So these are things like buttons, like lists, images, you know, horizontal rulers, things like that. And you specify them in the same way that you specify HTML. It's just a markup language. It's an extension of XML. It's called MXML. And what's cool is you can go into this design view, which is incredibly small right now because of this resolution. And I can actually drag and drop particular things I want to add, like a drop-down box or checkbox or so forth. So if I actually drag it in, you know, lay it out somewhere, I have some properties I can set manually, right? But then if I actually go to the source, it's created a tag, right? And if I set this tag's, ID equal to, like my whatever I want to set it to, I can then, in my action script, go and access this and change its properties. So I don't know what properties a checkbox has, but if we look at that checkbox, right, we see we have some properties like enabled or what happens on click, like what the handler function is. I can actually change that from the action script. And the way you add ActionScript to these MXML files is within, just like JavaScript, right, is put within HTML. We have these MX script tags that actually contain our ActionScript, right? So this is sort of like a high-level overview of what you can do with Flex. It's very with Flex, Flare, and ActionScript. So the only way you can kind of like really learn this is with just going through and looking at examples. And so there's a SourceForge forum for Flare, which is quite useful. If you just do SourceForge search for Flare, has a lot of discussion. Flap is this one particular guy's forum he made that has a lot of kind of like simple examples, like, how do I create a radial tree thing? How do I do a labeler? Like that kind of thing. He has really cool examples here that you can read through the code. And also the Flare demos on the Flare website. They do a lot of different things, and you can actually like go into the code and look, okay, how do they do that? Or what's going on here? Thank you, and check out these resources. And I hope there's you guys got a good introduction to ActionScript, Flare, and Flex. So thanks.